You are listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.
Hi, I wanted to tell you that Ms. Tammy and Logan came into Clever as soon as we opened and interrupted a transaction with another customer to tell me to tell you hi.
Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer, especially when the sun comes out.
Covering bicycling, trains, transit, simpler living, not reading the show notes until just now, and today, I'm on a boat.
Motherfucker. That's right. Yeah. We are in the studio with Josh. Do you want to go on record as your full public name, or are you just Josh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Josh Guttmacher.
You got it.
Of Team Sincerity.
Correct. Of Team Sincerity fame. It's good to see you again. Thank you for coming in. And believe it or not, you like boats.
Love them.
Yeah. Over here to my left, which doesn't matter because it's a mono podcast.
But it's my right.
Twitterless Andy.
Hello.
And Andy Schmidt.
Yes.
You are actually not, in fact, Twitterless anymore.
No. There's been some big changes.
Yeah. But you were formerly known as such.
Formerly known as Twitterless Andy.
Weren't you famously Twitterless? You were resisting it?
I was stubbornly Twitterless.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so thank you for doing that for so many years, and thank you for capitulating at just the right moment.
Right. Yeah. It was timed. it was a long time coming.
Yeah. Well, once the kids start to think that it's kind of lame,
right,
and they move on to some other form of, showing people their genitalia or something, then you can pick up Twitter and use that for what it's actually intended for.
Right. But I haven't figured out what that is yet.
Yeah. Has anybody? Hashtagging.
I don't know. My bike likes it.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Your bike follows things.
Yeah.
And sometimes you ride upon it.
Yes.
And then over here in this corner, you got to remind me of your last name.
Fritz.
Yes. John Fritz, sitting in the corner, looking resplendent in a plaid shirt, looking all the world like a boatman.
Oh, yes.
How do you do?
I'm very well today. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot.
So we're going to talk boats in just a minute because this is Boat Month.
Boat Month.
Yeah.
Yet.
We've been waiting for this. We've been anticipating Boat Month all month. So here it is. Since we created Boat Month at the beginning of this month.
I almost stabbed a guy just because I was waiting for Boat Month.
That's right. So I did the Ronde yesterday.
Yeah.
No, actually, it's 2 days
well,
ago
2 days
now.
Ago, yeah.
But it feels like it was yesterday.
There was another similar one yesterday, right?
I did that. I did half of it.
Oh, you
oh,
did?
Really?
The first half.
Josh G., you have done the Ronde. The first half of the second Ronde?
Yeah. Correct.
Okay, so this is the east side over like around, not Mount Tabor.
Does it
mostly
Happy,
Happy
Valley.
Valley.
Happy Valley.
Oh, okay.
So like Mount
so
Scott.
So does it go through Lentz?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Lentz is kind of flat.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you get to the Mount Scott area.
It started on the spring water this year. For city convenience.
Same amount of climbing?
I don't know. It was my first. It was plenty.
Was it lots and lots of climbing?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, because we've talked about this, I believe just last week, listener Drew wrote in. I did not see him there. It's fair because there was like, 1,000 bicyclists
right.
or something.
I saw Drew.
You saw Drew? Oh, nice. Was he doing the one? So maybe he didn't do the one on Saturday.
Or maybe he did both.
Maybe so.
Oh, my God.
He did say that any commuter could do it with enough pacing and meal breaks and staying properly hydrated.
Maybe.
I did none of those.
I'm convinced.
But it was a good time. We rode with our friend Evan, who ended up making an endo over his handlebars down a particularly steep downhill. And it was around kind of like a blind corner, and a car pulled out. They were like backing out of the driveway. And he did not collide with the car, but in the effort to stop and not hit the car, he ended up going over his handlebars and landing on the pavement.
Oh,
so... Yeah. Were I outside, I would spill a bit of my drink for him. We're in carpet, and we have to pay for that.
I mean, he's still alive, though.
He is alive. He's doing okay. We took him into urgent care.
We should clarify that pretty quickly.
And he did not break any bones or anything like that. He went down pretty hard, and he took a lot of skin off of his arm. Andy landed on his palm, and I believe he had something underneath his shirt too. Like he had just kind of like rashed it up quite a bit. So we ended up taking him to urgent care in a car to go, and he spent the rest of the night at home. So I felt bad about that, but he was a trooper because he did the whole thing with us before. And I don't know if the Ronde is like 8,000 feet climbing, on the west side of Portland, Oregon, then we did like 4,000 feet or something.
Right on.
There are some really, really steep hills.
It's fun.
Yeah. And you did...
a couple of years ago.
You and I probably did about the same amount, actually.
Quite possibly. We probably endowed... or he probably endowed at the same point that I fell off my bike.
You fell off?
Well, I jumped off.
Okay.
My front brakes locked up on me.
Okay. So you got it. Yeah. It was a necessary bail.
And, yeah.
Nice. So anyways, I did that, and then I got destroyed. After that... We went to the Inspired to Ride documentary from Nathan Goddamn Jones, the coolest guy in the world. We saw his film, and it was a great, great documentary. We were very well produced, and we stayed. Actually, I recorded the Q&A.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, I think we'll post that sometime later this week as well.
He let us use it.
I think so.
All right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I should make sure that's okay. Yeah, but we did that, and then one of the last questions in the Q&A was Eric Iverson sitting up front. He said, "Hey, is there going to be like a rolling bike party over to some bar?" And so we ended up at the Beer Mongers.
Yeah,
because we like the Beer Mongers. I'd like to think I had something to do with that choice.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, the Beer Mongers, who happen to be our beverage sponsors, we are drinking tonight a Vansterdam from Heathen Brewing. It's a pale ale, and it's how is it? Because I haven't tried it.
So far, it's pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah, no complaints here.
Takes you back to Amsterdam.
Excellent. Yeah, and it is 4:20 on the day that we record this, so maybe that's appropriate somehow. Weed has been legal in Amsterdam longer than a lot of other places. Probably not the first.
Sure.
Yeah. And this is another episode of American Jackass. But so for all those who toke up. I, of course, do not because I am federally regulated by the Department of Transportation. Yeah. But so it goes.
I don't, because I don't like the smell.
Right. Yeah. I don't like the smell either. It's weird. So, yeah. Anyways, but it is that day. And tomorrow will be the day after that day.
There you go.
Which is when you are most likely hearing this.
Oh, and in 2 days.
2 days.
Pins comes back to Portland.
Oh.
Lisa Nims, who filled in as our co-host.
That's right.
Whilst you were away, will be coming back to Portland.
And, fabulous.
Yeah.
Good times
will ensue.
She had a great conversation with you about vegan food.
Yes.
As I recall, last summer. It was like an hour and a half or 2 hours about veganism.
Yes.
Yeah, but there's no ism.
It was actually pretty heavily edited.
Okay.
The conversation was much longer.
So you recorded for like 2.5 hours?
Maybe two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Nice. You are... do you have a Pugsley?
The frame is in.
Nice.
The frame is in.
Okay.
It's still in the basement of Clever Cycles.
Very good.
I should go over there with a trailer of some sort and pick it up.
Go appropriate that frame and build some components onto it.
Yeah. Anna and I were thinking of doing that yesterday. And it would have been pretty fun. Like one idea I had was we also wanted to go like on a long ride. So grab the frame,
mm-hmm.
ride to wherever we'll ride.
Okay.
And then like, take a picture of the frame wherever we end up.
Nice.
Like, say, the St. John's Bridge.
Okay, this is an unbuilt frame.
Right.
And it's right next to the St. John's
right,
Bridge.
Right.
That's awesome.
Or just on top of Tabor. Or, like, any of the places that we ended up going.
Nice. Well, that...
We didn't.
Okay.
We didn't.
But it's a great idea. You could still do that.
I guess we could.
At some point. Yeah.
You should take it to the Adams Family House.
Wait, where is that?
Southeast.
Pharrell.
Yeah.
Like, the Adams Family?
A replica by fans who drive a hearse.
Really? Because I think I've seen the hearse around town. Is it like is there any other kind of, is it a Gothic hearse? I mean, is it done up to look a little bit spooky and is there like a skull mounted to it or something?
The house is complete.
Okay. The hearse?
It's like creepy and kooky.
Ah.
But that's what a Pugsley's from, right?
Right. Right.
Okay.
Yes.
To complete the circle. So anyways, yeah, that's good. You, sir, are drinking... I wanted to try and do like a Lionheart. Does that work?
Try again.
Try drinking Lionheart kombucha.
It's great. That's the sound tigers make.
It's been trademarked, yeah. But many thanks to the Beer Mongers. If you are looking for a pint,
yes,
whether you be from Portland or elsewhere, they are a fantastic place, and we appreciate their sponsorship.
Hey, so, guess what I completed today?
What'd you complete?
A wheel.
Oh, nice.
I have a new rear wheel.
Yeah, because you've been working on this for a while.
I've been working on both the front and the rear together. The front, the wheel itself is done. I just haven't put all of the pieces together now.
Gotcha. So which pieces are extant?
Rim tape, tubes, tires.
There we go. So the wheel is done.
The wheel itself is done.
That's beautiful. Well, congratulations. Yeah. Do you feel a sense of accomplishment?
I do. Now ask me if I want to build another wheel set.
Would you like to build another wheel tomorrow?
No.
Okay.
No, not really.
How are your dishing skills?
They were not so great. I had to be coached. It's a good thing I have two roommates that also are really into bikes.
Nice.
And one of them was like, I hate to break it to you, but that's not going to roll. I thought it was totally true. Like, it wasn't rubbing on any of the little thingities.
Yeah.
Seat stays?
Yeah. Or no, not the seat stays. Like, on the truing wheel.
Stand.
Or the truing stand. But anyways, he's like, yeah, it's too far over to the one side.
Okay.
But he coached me on how to do that, and it's all good. Nice. It's got a bit of a hop in it.
Okay.
And I think, and I knew, or actually I was told that this is pretty common, that like the first mile or so, like all of that twisting and torque you've put on the spokes.
Oh, it kind of gets distributed or worked out.
Well, worked out. And so some of them may have come untrued.
Okay.
And I'll just have to rework that again.
Every time I've purchased a wheel from a bicycle shop, they always say, like, come in, you know, after you've ridden it for a while, and we'll adjust it up again. And I've never felt the need to. Like, I think every wheel build I have built, or bought, rather, from a bike shop, I've always thought that, oh, hey, this is going to be just fine.
Yeah.
I've never noticed it, like, going out of true or anything. But they always make the disclaimer. I guess if you're a good, if you're a wheel artist, you still have to make the disclaimer.
I'll be honest, I'm half tempted to go into a shop and say, like, I don't know. This has a hop in it.
I got this here last week. And
well, not even that. Like, I'm willing to pay for it.
Oh, I see.
There are just some things that don't want to do myself anymore.
No, that makes sense. For sure. Well, congratulations, sir. So,
thanks.
Me to pain and beer, and you to the completion of a wheel and the acquisition of a frame. Beverages in the air, and a cheers to this.
And to boat month.
And to
cheers.
Boat month, damn it.
Boat month.
That's right. So let's talk about boats. I'm curious, because like we've talked a little bit about how boats and bicycles have some things in common. I'm curious from any of you what you see. Like, what are the similarities between a boat and a bike?
Audible crickets.
I thought you said there wasn't going to be a test.
Oh, right. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's nice that there's only power put into it by either yourself through a bicycle or through the wind with a sailboat, not particularly a motorboat. But
right.
Yeah, it's good to be moving with no noise.
I think one of my favorite things about boat, and again, this is like my boating experience is largely sail and oar.
Yeah.
And it is just the quiet of it and getting away. You know, there's a big difference between boating in, say, in going water skiing with somebody, going out on a water skiing boat, and, you know, it's loud and it has this certain violence when you're skipping across the water and the wind, and it's hard to talk with people and it's similar, like if you're biking beside like a busy road, you know,
right.
Where you have that same, like you can't really talk those scenarios kind of strip away a lot of the things that I like about both of those.
Right.
Whereas if you're like doing like a sail and oar thing or bicycling kind of, you know, off of busy roads, then there's just this kind of like you're in motion and you're going somewhere, but there's this kind of quietness that you can socialize, or you can just enjoy the quiet, or
it's kind of like the comparison like between a bicycle and a two-stroke scooter or something like that. Like if someone's just going down the street on one of those scooters that goes or something like that.
I hate those things.
They're pretty bad. But what kind of boats do you guys have experience with? Because you were saying before, John, you have a 10-foot.
Yeah, a little tiny boat, little tiny sailboat. It's got a mainsail. It's called a lateen rig sail.
Okay.
So it doesn't have a jib, which is the large sail way out front. It just has a tall, broad sail.
Okay, that, so like an omni sail machine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good little boat. It's wooden. It was handmade by a guy up in Seattle at the Seattle Center for Wooden Boats.
Okay.
It's pretty light. I tow it by bicycle.
Ooh.
What's it made of?
It's wooden. Okay. Primarily plywood, and I'm not sure what kind of wood. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the mast is.
Is that like molded plywood, like it's been soaked and shaped or something like that? Or is it just kind of like slats?
It's kind of like, I bet it's probably half-inch plywood, and then it was molded over like a subframe.
Okay.
And screwed together and caulked, and then probably removed from the frame.
Okay.
And then finished.
Yeah.
And seats put in and accoutrements.
How many people can you put into that boat?
Like 1.5.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever find the half person?
Sometimes. They're just floating, but sometimes I do find them. You find the right spot in the Columbia.
Danger, danger. Seriously, can it hold two people, or is that kind of dicey?
Yeah, it can hold two people fine. It's not a very fast boat, that's for sure, even with one person in it. Yeah, but it's great for like kind of Sunday strolling with two people and a bottle of wine.
Nice.
Yeah.
So tell me about towing it by bike. How does that work?
It works out pretty well. I found kind of like this like utility dolly kind of thing with 20-inch mag wheels at a garage sale.
Okay.
And I ended up repurposing that into a trailer.
Nice.
And so I built that up, and it hooks on to like a Blue Sky seat post hitch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it works pretty well. And then I could just bike it to the river. I don't live too far from like 33rd and Columbia.
Okay. So North Portland up near the Columbia River.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I could just bike to that boat ramp at like 34th or 35th and lock up my bike and lock up the trailer with it and just toss the boat off the dock and away I go.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I would imagine you get some looks from people because most of the people putting boats in are putting them in by truck.
Yeah, very large vehicle. I try to steer clear of that boat ramp on the weekends.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a busy spot, and maybe even more so since it's all like, I don't know, it's enormous. Like they've repaved the place. And
yeah, it's very nice.
They do have a parking fee there now, which you can avoid, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no hassle from anybody. It's great.
Nice. Well, that's very cool. So I'm guessing that there's not that many people that tow their boats by bike, at least not like per capita. I'm sure there are other people around the world that do so.
A lot more kayaks and canoes, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh, do you have a kayak?
I have access to a large canoe
okay.
Right now. And I used to have a sailboat smaller than John's, and I tried to trailer it, and it was a disaster. It would take me an hour to go a mile. It was bouncing. I haven't seen John's trailer yet, but it sounds a little more stable than mine was.
Yeah, it works all right. There's just like two fins below the boat, and then there are these two rails that I built onto the trailer that just kind of match up with those fins. And it's got some simple pipe insulation, and throw a strap around the whole thing. It stays on the back of the boat. And then the tongue is a separate piece, and it's kind of like a big T shape.
Okay.
With the bottom of the T hooking to the seat post.
So a modular trailer, does that mean you can break it down and kind of stow it away? Is it like bicycle sized at that point?
Yeah. I mean, the pieces are all welded together, so they don't really break apart. But
okay.
It is two part.
I see.
So
not easily disassembled, but
yeah.
But made in two pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I kind of want to just build some sort of trailer holder on the boat.
There we go.
And like maybe like a bike tray hanging out the back of the boat.
I was curious about this because, I mean, there were those guys, who the bike packers that did like Alaska with fat bikes and inflatable rafts. Did you guys see that?
Mm-hmm. Alpaca rafts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which seems like an awesome idea. But I've always wondered, like, how do you store? Like, it seems like in order to use one, you have to leave the other somewhere. So
yeah, that's
figuring
true.
Out a workable solution.
I mean, you can't leave the rabbit with the feed.
Right.
And you can't leave the fox with the rabbit.
Yeah, exactly. And the farmer has to go, like, you know, across the river and such. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what was your trailer like, Josh?
Well, the tongue was made of conduit, which is probably why it bounced, and it would have made sparks if the boat wasn't made of
like metal conduit,
plastic, like electrical. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just
yeah.
Like weak, and it had to be a little longer than your average trailer.
Okay.
But
was it two piece also? Did you have like back wheels way out back, and then a front?
Yeah, I got the wheels from a wheelbarrow.
Oh yeah.
So the axle was super sturdy, but that was the only strong thing on the trailer.
It's the original fat biking. Right there.
But now I know it's better to have a friend with a boat. at least a sailboat. But
yeah.
I like my sailboats as small as they can get, so you get wetter. It's more fun,
that's
more
part
athletic.
Of the fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same reason you would do a roller coaster or like the log flume ride at some amusement park. It's like you want to get wet. You're going near the water because you're hoping you'll get some.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aaron, I don't know if I shared this on the show before or not. I think there was, at one point, Adele and I decided that we were going to make a needlepoint placard to put above our door that said other people have boats.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Okay. Yeah, no, it was just the idea that, like, you know, we're talking about, like, big old boats here. Not much the kind of boats we're discussing now, but like a luxury cruiser or a water skiing boat or something like that.
Okay.
Just that, like, you can find a friend that has one usually. You don't have to buy your own. Kind of like the sharing economy sort of thing. Like
we bring
you beer and you take us out on the boat. Those are separate, of course, because we wouldn't encourage the unsafe operation of a motor vehicle, no matter where it was. But yeah, just kind of that, yeah. But like you were saying, Josh, other people have boats. So you're thinking maybe not like getting your own and just borrowing one?
Yeah. Transportation, barnacles, whatever.
Barnacles. I wonder if there's ever been a bike that had barnacles on it. Maybe if it fell off of...
I was going to say, how would that happen? Yeah. Unless you fished it out of the water.
Right. Like it was bound for here on some freight ship, and then it fell overboard, and then it spent like 20 years down at the bottom of the mouth of the Columbia or something like that. That's the only thing I could imagine.
It's like a Bridgestone floated over from Japan with the tsunami.
Totally.
There you go.
Totally, yeah.
Landed on the Oregon coast like everything else does.
Like the Iredale.
One of those docks just happened to have a bike locked to it.
It had some live eels inside the frame.
They're electric eels, which means you have propulsion assistance.
There you go.
That was dumb. Andy Schmidt, you make sails, right?
I'm a retired sailmaker.
Oh, okay, you used to make sails.
Yeah, I retired when
like
I had children.
Professionally?
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, it's a lot of time on your hands and knees, kind of crawling around, drawing lines on fabric, cutting fabric, sewing, going to boats.
Yeah. Is this are they all custom or do you make
It was all custom, kind of one off stuff. There's a lot of places where you can just get, you know, there's a lot of kind of one design boats where they just all have the same stuff,
right?
You know, and but the stuff that I did was more like cruising boats. So
there's
a lot of people like, oh, I want to reinvent, you know, the wheel kind of situations.
Right,
and you know, but it was just. You know, we would kind of customize each one to somebody that wants to do offshore cruising is very different than somebody that just wants to sail around on a lake.
Sure.
You know, how many of them had skull and crossbones on them?
None. No skull and crossbones. When we would get a particularly, a customer who seemed like the right person, often we had this white, so all the... You know, the numbers and logos that go on the sails is stuff called insignia fabric. All that stuff's called insignias.
Okay.
And so there's this insignia fabric, which is this adhesive, and you can get white, which is basically invisible from the front. But when it's rear lit, you can see it.
Oh.
But the sneaky part about it is that pretty much it's almost impossible to see it from on the boat, but... People in other boats can see it.
Okay.
So there were a couple instances where we would put something on the sail that may not be something you would want to put on your sail so that people hoist their sail and then they go sailing around. And
the big old sail, this is blow me.
Something like that. Yeah. You know, not exactly
this
that.
This sailor is an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. It usually was more symbolic, you know,
kind of
sort of, you know, silhouette figure. But
That's awesome.
But that was, you know, you had to be, we had to really like you for that.
Okay. Because
that took a lot of extra effort, okay. You know, and mostly it was just, you know, you might get your sale number or something.
Big old joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, did you do those 80s style rainbow giant spinnakers?
Oh, yeah. Those were the best. We would actually got most of, like, our color schemes. People would come in and they always have their, oh, I want it this color, and this color. And it's like, oh, that's not going to look good, you know, kind of no matter what it was. And then and we would just look through, like, old, like outdoor catalogs. We had a whole stack of them. And just find, you know, kind of like what you're saying, like, you know, 70s ski jackets.
There we go.
And steal the color schemes from those. And they were always, you know, the schemes that the people would come in with sounded good. And in your mind, they were good. But the reality of them rarely worked out the way you wanted it to.
Right.
But these 70 ski jackets, like, they knew something back, you know, they knew something in those days.
Right, right.
And
classy.
And even though, you know, the like burgundy, teal, and white may not sound like a great combination, you know, it works.
Yeah.
Is there a certain color combination that you're looking for? Like that?
You just
like,
want it to look good. Okay. Well, part of it is you want it to be sort of unique because if you're, you know, for example, if you're even a lot of like casual sailors race, which I guess is sort of like biking. Cause,
sure.
But anyways, so, you know, there's like these weeknight kind of race series.
Would you call that a regatta?
Yeah.
Okay.
These like weeknight regattas.
Nice.
And sometimes they call them beer can regattas.
Ah.
Like, you know, kind of on kind the
like,
combo.
Is this like an alley cat then? Like a,
I guess.
Like a boat alley cat.
Sort of.
An unsanctioned
but,
race.
But, you know, you want to be like, oh, we're the one with the purple and green sail or whatever.
Right.
You know, we're the one with the pink and yellow sail. Where, you know, so if you've got, you know, 15 boats that are kind of lined up charging for whatever mark they're going for, then it's nice if they look different.
Each one has their own.
Yeah, otherwise,
color.
Like, ho-hum.
That's right. Great. Have either of you two done one of these unsanctioned races?
Oh, they're sanctioned. No, they're sanctioned
by
yacht
sanctioned.
Clubs.
Okay.
And there's usually like, you know, there's, yeah, they're like, they're legit events.
Have either of you raced a boat?
I was 10.
Oh, really?
Probably.
Nice. How'd you do?
Well, we had wooden plywood boats with Simpsons characters, and they were called Tex because they were designed at MIT, but they were about to get new boats, so they encouraged us to ram each other.
Like making a demo derby?
T-boned. And this was on Lake Ontario in Rochester, New York.
Nice.
Here you kids. Just have these boats.
Yeah.
Go that drown yourselves.
That sounds kind of like tall bike jousting in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was. Nice. Did you destroy a boat with yours?
It was hard. They were really tough plywood boats.
Well-made boats. Nice. And how about you, John?
No racing in my boating career.
It's probably safer that way.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, my boat does maybe 6 knots max.
Okay.
7 knots max.
It's not a speed demon.
No.
It doesn't plane, right?
That's right.
That's when it jumps up on its own bow wake.
Ah.
Motorboats do it too, but there's a different speed.
Yeah.
So some people think bike frames do that, and you get in a
like if you get to a certain speed, you kind of create your own like air current or something like that.
More about how it flexes.
Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah.
Our friend,
so you
Jan
have
Hines.
Like this sort of lateral flex between the front and the rear, right? And once you get to a certain speed, it like sort of evens itself out.
It's a mystery. Some people think it might be in the tires. You know.
Oh yeah.
Different pressure.
That's fascinating.
But,
yeah. It's unexplainable, the movement of things. Well, it is probably, but
I think physics has a lot to do with it.
That makes sense. Now that you say it.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the case.
Yeah.
I want to believe it's magic.
I'm curious.
Don't ruin this with your science.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just going to steer clear
physics
of that.
Physics is just a theory.
It's never been proven.
That's
right. There are many things that are theoretical. I'm curious just for all
Atomic
three of
theory
you.
Theory is still just a theory.
That's true. Favorite boat experiences, favorite adventures that you've had, good or bad?
A few years back, me and a good friend of mine borrowed his parents' boat and sailed it from Whidbey Island up near the San Juans.
Ooh.
All throughout the San Juans, and we actually got marooned on, oh, I forget the name of the island.
Okay. But is it one of the ones that you can't get to unless you have your own boat?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah, it had no economy. There was just like one little community.
Like a guy trading shells or something?
No, it was just, it was empty. It was a desolate island with just dirt roads. It was Waldron Island. It was Waldron Island.
Okay.
And so...
I feel like I've seen that name on a map before.
Yeah, it's up just a little to the northwest of Orcas Island.
Okay. And, yeah. Is it a state park?
I don't believe so. I believe it's all privately owned.
Okay. Because I know a lot of the islands up there are like little state parks that basically you boat out to and hang out on.
Yeah.
But this is a private one, Waldron Island.
Yeah.
And you got marooned there.
Yeah, we were having trouble with the motor and the sun was setting. And
didn't you say it was a sailboat?
Yeah, it was a sailboat. It was a 27-foot Catalina. Yeah, it was a lot of fun sailing there. But then we had some motor trouble. And we had to pull into the dock. And the locals started yelling at us because we weren't supposed to be at the dock.
Get off my dock.
Yeah. They were like, no, this is loading only, and the only parking spot is taken. So we moored on someone's buoy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like offshore a little bit?
Yeah.
With hostile natives kind of jeering at you from afar?
Yeah, yeah. And, the post was being delivered by boat, which was kind of cool.
Oh, fascinating.
But I coaxed my friend and his other friend that we should take bikes with us because, you know, we were going to stop at Friday Harbor and ride around. I thought that'd be great.
That's the big one that most people go to. Like if you go to the San Juan Islands, Friday Harbor is probably like your guaranteed stop.
Yeah, yeah. But when we got marooned, it was great to have bikes. We talked to some my friend's friend had known a guy from like 9 years ago in high school that had a yurt on the island.
Ooh.
And he was like, we can stay with him. He's like, nice. I haven't seen him in 9 years, but he wouldn't mind me like knocking on his door.
We were cool back then,
on the
right?
The door of his yurt.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
So we talked to some like local island kid, and he gave us like somewhat comprehensive directions on how to find this place. And it was on the other side of the island and all dirt road, sort of steep grades. No road signs,
mm-hmm.
Crazy hippie art everywhere. There was like a grove of alder trees that had been yarn bombed.
Just like, yarn bombed with like knitting yarn.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just on the side of the road. Went down the wrong driveway. I saw some weird stuff like, some like gasoline next to some funky chair and next to some trash and,
interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
This will all burn soon.
Yeah, so we got out of there. And
it's the point where you're hearing banjos or something.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So we ended up finding some people that were driving out of their driveway, and we asked them, and we finally found his yurt, and he wasn't there. He was a merchant marine. He was out at sea.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, being as... you know, the little hometown island it was, the yurt was open. So,
I used to know
wait,
you.
You just like kind of hung out in there? Or?
Well, actually, my friend's friend knew his neighbors as well. It was like someone he had met at like a party 9 years ago, and they were like, oh, yeah, we live next to him on Waldron Island, and we have our yurts there too. So we kind of trekked through this little trail in the woods over to find their place, and, knocked on their door, and the lady was like, Pete? What? How? I haven't seen you in like 10 years. What are you doing here?
But it was such a great party.
Yeah, yeah. And so we told her the whole story. We're like, well, we're having motor problems. We think, you know, the motor was flooded. We can't get it started again. You know, is there any help? Could you? Because there wasn't cell phone service, so she had email for help. And sure enough, like, she fed us and gave us wine, and it was great.
Nice.
Yeah, they had a little, like, main house and then three little yurts that were kind of like bedrooms.
Like a village setup.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Real nice. So we ended up crashing there with them, and then the next morning got up, and they fed us breakfast and biked back to the boat and took our little – the little – boat you tow behind the sailboat.
Okay.
dinghy. Ah. Took the dinghy back to the sailboat.
Is that what a dinghy is?
Yeah. It's,
okay.
It's like a little inflatable boat that
gotcha.
You just tow behind so you anchor out and get to shore.
Okay.
Yeah.
I knew it was a small boat, but I wasn't exactly sure like what kind of a boat that would be.
Yeah,
so just it's kind of like your it's like a shuttle car or something like something to get you from one place to another.
Yeah, exactly. It's like your grocery getter.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
And the boat's your RV, of course.
There we go.
You know, your
yeah.
Cadillac.
Yeah. Or your semi truck if you're Todd the truck driver.
Oh yeah.
Because he has his grocery getter bike inside that. That nice. So you had a pleasant evening on an otherwise inhospitable island.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. Their property, you know, bordered the water and hung out by the water that night and. But the next day, we got back to the boat, and...
it was vandalized.
Pirates had taken it.
Yar.
The San Juan pilots. but luckily, the motor was no longer flooded.
Just needed time to kind of clear out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you would have a motor, I'm assuming, because the wind isn't always in your favor in a sailboat.
Yeah, that's right. And with something about the size of a 27-foot, sometimes when you're pulling into dock, you can't effectively sail it into dock. You need to control it in another means.
You could like careen into the dock
or you could
putt in with like some trolling motor or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But luckily the conditions were right. It was, you know, like 10 a.m. in the morning, nice clear day. And we, unhooked from the buoy and set sail. It was great.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's awesome. The San Juans are a beautiful place. Aaron, have you been there?
I've not yet.
We got to, yeah, either we got to go or you and your friend have to go someday.
We got to get out there.
Yeah. It's not the San Juans, but our listener, Glenn, on Marrowstone Island, down near Port Townsend. He is the,
right.
I believe he said he is the scourge of the Salish Sea.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yes.
He's our pirate in rubber boots that listens occasionally. So, how's it going, Glenn? This episode is probably mostly for him, right? And for other people who like boats and boating things. But definitely a shout out to Glenn because he's making it happen.
Yeah.
He goes like mussel and clam gathering with his boat.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. And he may have several. But, yeah. Josh, what about you? Adventures?
I have good memories of a couple family trips on the Thousand Islands of the Great Lakes. It's probably the San Juans of the...
Is that where they make East the dressing?
It might be. But it was a lot more fun when you could hop back and forth between Canada and the U.S. You didn't have to, pre-9/11, you didn't have to announce your travel plans years ahead. A lot of it's about drug running, too.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's no passports.
Those prescription Canadian drugs.
Right.
It's a good deal.
But I remember we were in some small town up the St. Lawrence Seaway. It might have been Canadian. I don't know. But we found a classified ad for a Schwinn... orange crate bike, cruiser ones. And I was probably seven
right,
or eight,
okay.
And my dad tried to convince me that we should buy it because I was in line for a sort of nice bike. And I was really worried that if we towed it back on the dinghy, we had about seven people on a sailboat, that it would get rusty. And I think it was mostly fresh water. I don't know what I was thinking, but I was so concerned that a day on a open boat would ruin my new bike.
I see.
My 30-year-old bike.
So the salt water is more corrosive than the fresh water?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Most definitely.
I know very little about rust.
Cars will not last in Michigan because they salt the roads been salting the roads.
I see.
I think they may have changed their policy.
But you see people in Alaska taking their Pugsleys up the coast and getting really salty.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Good rinse.
Maybe, yeah, they just wash them off afterwards.
Hopefully those are belt drive.
That seems like it would be a good idea, right?
That would eat the chain.
Yeah. Chain links and sand, not mix.
Not worth it.
No.
It's just a bad idea. Yeah. I think most of the rust on my bike is probably from my coastal tours. That's my guess.
Yeah. I mean, you know, rain will do it eventually.
Or maybe it's just a lot of rain. I do live in Oregon.
Yeah.
And despite the weather outside right now, it's beautiful. It does get wet.
So, Josh, you didn't get the bike?
No, so it is a weird good memory, but, you know.
You were always very responsible, even from a young age.
Seriously.
My dad didn't boss me around.
I don't want a new bike,
Don't
Dad.
Take no guff.
I am not going to get a rusty bike.
That's what sailing is really about for me, is reclaiming it.
Yeah.
So you're ever sailing in search of the orange grate? Yeah. Well, I mean, that sounds like a good ride, though. And again, like going, you said Thousand Islands, right? So there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of room to explore, and hopping between Canada and the U.S.
Yeah.
So yeah, nice. Andy.
They've been talking, I've been kind of trying to think of like one particular instance, and I don't know that I have one particular instance. But
yeah,
of course,
I have sort of two
things that I'll say, like, they were just like kind of like really epic sort of boating memories.
Yeah.
And one is just, summer camp as a kid. I grew up in the Los Angeles area, and one year for summer camp, we went to, Catalina Island, which is this little, you know, this little island.
Yeah.
It's like 20 some miles off the coast. And we did this kind of, you know, high adventure where you canoe around kind of one end of the island and then they pick you up. It was a multi-night canoe trip where you canoe in the ocean and then you land on the beach and you camp, and the next day you get up and you canoe further and then you go around the island. And so for a day or two, you're on the sheltered side of the island, and then you go around the point, and then you're on the ocean side of the island where the swells get bigger and the cliffs are steeper and all this.
High adventure.
And I just remember at the time being, you know, all of our stuff was in garbage bags, and I just remember at the time being mostly kind of cold and scared and wet and sandy. But looking back, it was this, you know,
it's like epic.
This thing,
awesome,
you know,
yeah.
Where it's like, wow, I can't believe I did that, and nobody died. And but the other thing is, we're talking about racing a little bit, and I raced with these guys in one of these like weeknight beer can regattas, and they had. This was in Newport Harbor, and the winds, you know, can be fickle.
The Newport Harbor in Oregon?
No, Newport. This is Newport Beach, California.
California,
down again,
okay.
LA area.
Gotcha.
And there's several islands in this harbor, and so it's not so much a big open harbor as it is a whole bunch of channels that go in all different directions, and the winds can be kind of fickle. So they have this big book. When you register for the series, you get this big book of all the different, you know, courses for the races. And so you go by the what do they call it? There's a boat that sits at the starting line.
Yeah.
And you go by and you're like, you sign in for that particular race, and they say course E7 or whatever course it is that night. And then you flip through your book and you know the course for that night. But this carrying this book seemed like too much effort,
uh-huh.
You know, and like who's going to keep track of the book from one week to the next,
right,
and,
right.
You know, all this about the book. And so we decided to not carry the book. And instead, so our kind of strategy was we would just follow the other boats and then just hope that at the very end of the race and the final charge,
you got
to
pull
finish
ahead
line,
a little bit. Yeah.
That we could kind of pull it off. And
that's
and
actually kind of genius.
Well, no, there was. Well, it was until there was one particular race where there was like a, I don't know, you might call it like the secret last buoy you had to go around.
Okay.
And so we're kind of, I forget the exact details of this, but we were on this one tack and we were pointing really high, which is kind of when you're sailing towards where the wind is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And we were pointing kind of high, and these other boats were not pointing as high. They were more kind of going across the wind.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, obviously we're going to the finish line from, you know, once we rounded this one point, not realizing that we needed to kind of go out of our way a little bit and then cut back to the finish line. And so we kind of went straight to the finish line, and we're like, yes!
We won.
And then as we're watching these other boats kind of go, oh, they're not as good as sailors as us. They can't point as high as us, you know. They can only go across the wind, you know. We've got this edge. And then they go out, and then they go around the buoy, and at that moment, like right before we cross the finish line, we recognized that we were fools.
So at that point, you just roll in, and you're like, yeah, check us out.
Or, yeah, we just went in and then went and had burgers and beers.
Like we took our reward.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's everybody, you know, still gets to go to the after party, so no matter how you finish. So we technically didn't finish.
Okay.
Even though we crossed the finish line
right,
first.
Right, right.
Let that be known.
Well, it's here on public record.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well done, sir. Well done. But
so,
you
it
also
felt good to cross first. I mean, even if we missed that last mark.
I think maybe I think Adele was saying she was going to do that on the Ronde. Like there was a part because like the Ronde
just goes straight to the finish line.
Well, it takes you up and down hills for you know, eight or nine different climbs.
Yeah, there's
and, like,
there's
all
a point where you go up the same hill a couple times.
Right, right. Know? So she was saying like, I'm just going to like cut that part out. But I don't think she did that. But there are many ways to cut corners. And I think, I mean, you know, again, like you kind of have to weigh that out. Like, do you want to win the race or you just want a burger? Right. I would like a burger.
Yeah, no, the burger was delicious.
Well done.
It was it was kind of one of those situations where, like, you know, any organization that will allow me to be a member.
Right.
But in the best possible way.
Of course.
You know, because it's
of
a course. Yacht club. But
yeah.
But a pretty kind of like lowbrow kind of yacht club, which is nice.
Like a yacht rock club?
Well, yeah. Well, it was more like a yacht club where, like, you pay your $35 a year and you can be a member. Like,
okay.
There's no really initiation. There's no – you don't have to be – what do they call it when you know somebody that's in, that's already in?
Oh, invited. Recommended. Or,
yeah, you don't have to kind of be, like, recommended in. And some of them, you know, you have to have, you know, six recommendations. You know, you have to really be invested and you've got to, you know, do all this stuff. Whereas this is more like, you know, you pay your $35 and you can – and you're in.
Right, right.
So
– Should we create a thing now that everyone can be a part of?
What do you mean?
Like a team, like, sincerity?
Yeah, like
the,
like,
internet?
Team sincerity nautical version.
Boat sincerity.
Whoa. Boat sincerity. Yeah.
Well, we were talking to – we did this little bike ride to – I think you went to the Lincoln Street Canoe and Kayak Museum. You went with us, Josh.
Yeah.
And do you remember the guy's name? Harvey? Was that the proprietor's name?
I don't remember.
He had talked about a few years ago, he and some buddies had tried to start the, what's the name of the lake in Laurelhurst Park? It actually has a name.
Does it have a name?
It has a
it's
name.
I was not aware.
No, it's not like, not Laurelhurst Lake. It's some other name that unless you know what
okay.
it is, you don't, you know, you're like,
Dog
that?
Bath Lake.
Right.
Yeah, and so he.
That's what I would call it.
It wasn't that. It sounded like a legit place. And so he, I guess a few years ago, and some buddies tried to create the, whatever the name of that lake is,
the Dog Bath Lake Yacht Club, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess for whatever reason, it didn't really gain traction.
Okay.
You know, they like kind of did this little campaign to try to get members
right.
and get people to join to sort of legitimize it and grow it a little bit.
Do you think the Parks Department was like not having it or?
Well, I don't know that they were really.
They were not aware of it.
I mean, I don't know all the details.
Yeah.
But he would be a good person to have on
okay.
for Boat Month.
Yeah, definitely. And the Lincoln Street, what is it? The Lincoln Street Boat
Canoe
and Kayak?
Canoe and Kayak,
kayak and Museum.
Canoe. It's a fascinating place if you haven't been there.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
walked past it.
I've been past it a hundred times.
It's a cool place, and the proprietor is really cool.
There's a bunch of boats in there, and there's a lot of like indigenous boat work, like really, really old canoes from
yeah.
the Northwest. That
They're
are
actually
there.
Not originals. That was
okay.
one of the fascinating
replicas.
Things. He doesn't like right. to have – so when he gets the real deal,
oh, yeah.
he, I guess, makes all the measurements – and then gives the original to like a real museum.
Okay.
Okay.
Because I guess there's a lot of liability and responsibility for taking
sure.
care of the art, the actual
And he'd rather
artifact.
Not have that. He'd rather
and so
just have.
And so he just makes, so they're all really accurate replicas of, you know, old timey.
That's very
boats.
Cool.
And,
nice.
But no, it's a really interesting place.
Yeah.
But it's only open for, you know, maybe 2 hours mm-hmm. on
yeah,
one night a week.
Like on a Wednesday or something.
Yeah, and by appointment. That was the other thing is when we went, we weren't sure we could make his, you know, scheduled time. And we went, there was a small group of us going. And he was, I just emailed him like a week in advance and he was completely accommodating.
Very cool.
And
what's the cross street over there?
50-something, 40-something.
Okay.
I want to say it's just uphill from like 50. Well, it's right near where we all, I was used to bike near. So it's like 53rd or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's somewhere around, you know, yeah. say 45th to 55th somewhere.
On
I'm inclined
Street
to say
in
that's
Southeast
below
Portland.
Below 50th, but
mm-hmm.
I don't, I'm pretty, you know.
Yeah.
I'm willing to give in to that it's above 50th.
Right. Well, if you're looking for adventure, you can go up on Lincoln Street and find it.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be our...
You should
yeah.
just go up and down Lincoln Street
That's right.
anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah it's a fine street for biking on.
Yeah.
Totally, yeah.
But
I was going to ask before, as we maybe wrap this up, if anybody wants to get into boating, what are your recommendations?
I have a vision.
Yeah.
When I lived in Boston, I tried forever to get a job at this great organization called Community Boating.
Okay.
And they let kids sail all summer for $1, basically like a full day camp.
Really?
They had scholarships. I mean, it's still going on. It's 60 years old, an amazing organization, and every city should have one. And you might say, what do bikes and boats have in common? Some people think they're elitist and inaccessible.
Ah.
Maybe
go.
More so on sailing.
Until
but,
you know the truth.
That's why I'm here.
But I'd like to change that here in Portland a little. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. then we should be referring like-minded people to you, Josh Guttmacher.
Yeah, in a couple months.
Okay, excellent. Once things cool down a bit. Excellent. Yeah, that's awesome. Either the rest of you?
I'm unfamiliar with any the same kind of thing, but I believe Fritz said something earlier, or John.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you had a first name until tonight.
Yeah.
So Fritz said mentioned the Center for Wooden Boats in Seattle, which I know that's kind of a trek from Portland. But if you haven't been there, they do boat rentals, and you have to kind of be certified by them.
Okay.
To take their boats out, but
is that a difficult process?
You have to take a class and not crash into stuff.
Okay.
But
it's doable.
But yeah, it's doable.
Yeah.
And it's there. But their boats, the kind of thing that I think is cool about their boats is it's a, kind of a hands-on museum. So the craft are all these kind of older, you're not just like jumping into a piece of plastic. You're jumping into like a real live wooden boat that's, handcrafted by somebody. And there's goofy little, it looks like it's been worked by human hands. And it's the boats have a lot of character.
As opposed to injection molded or something.
Yeah, as opposed to just some sort of, just like kind of fiberglass or plastic boat. This is, the functional, but not quite the same experience. And that's a... that's a great way, I think, to get into boating.
Okay.
Although it's not really close. But one thing I ran into, I was down at Selwood Park probably a year or two ago, and this guy had hands down the most, cheapest, crude, ugliest, most rudimentary boat that he had built. This most rudimentary boat. And he had built it.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know, maybe two sheets of that really thin, cheap plywood. It's $8 or $10 a sheet.
Okay.
And he found some free plans online, and there is no finish work. He just, rolled some epoxy on over the fiberglass.
Waterproofed it.
Waterproof.
Well, it was stitch and glue, where you have to drill little holes. There's no mold. You cut the shapes. That's what the plan is for.
Okay.
And then you basically drill a bunch of holes right along the edges, and then you use wire, basically as thread.
Okay.
Wow.
And just sew the pieces of plywood together. And because they're thin plywood, they're flexible.
Sure.
And so, assuming you've drawn your lines and cut the pieces the right shapes, you basically stitch this thing together, and it becomes the right shape. And then you just take fiberglass and go over all the corners.
A little waterproofing. And
you roll some fiberglass on. And this thing had just big goobers of, fiberglass and the resin. But here's this guy that's out on the water in this boat that probably cost him $150 bucks. And
he's on a boat and we're not.
And he was out on a boat on the water. And he had a sail made of like a blue tarp.
Nice.
That he had, cut a slit in it and duct taped it back together to kind of give it some shape so that he could actually go to wind a little bit. And it was kind of one of those things where it was, ultra econo.
Like anybody could do this.
Pretty much.
They just need a little guidance.
Yeah, he was like, I never really build stuff. I just wanted a boat, and this was seemed to be the quickest and dirtiest and fastest, best way to get a boat.
Totally. Yeah.
So, nice. But that may not be for everybody. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, we have a canoe, and the way that I got the canoe was everybody that I knew, I just told people, we're looking for a canoe. We're looking for a canoe. We're looking for a canoe. And if you tell enough people that you're looking for a canoe,
someday the canoe finds
somebody
you.
Just gives you a canoe.
Right, exactly.
And that's what happened to us.
Well, hey,
gave us a canoe.
Yeah. Looking for a canoe.
Right. Yeah. Well, keep going. You got to tell, we told lots of people, not just one guy.
Looking for a canoe.
Just say that one more time. John Fritz.
I'm looking for a canoe.
Yes. Okay, good. Well, these are some good resources.
I'm looking for $1 million.
I'm looking for a beer.
I got one more for you.
Yeah.
The PSU sailing team super casual.
That's here in Portland State University.
You might go take one class, and if you get in on the team, I get the impression you can kind of hang out with the team after you're done at PSU.
We talked to my friend Billy Skiffington 2 years back now, something
right.
like that, and we talked with he and Kyle Johnson about sailing. And I don't know if this is public record. I will just say that hypothetically, a friend of mine might still have access to boats whenever he wants them because he was once part of a sailing club. So, yeah.
I vaguely remember somebody mentioning something.
Right, I can't remember who that was
in that interview.
I don't remember if that happened or not. Anyways, yeah. So that's another way to find out. There is higher education. That's always an option. Well, thank you all for coming in. Do you have time to hang out with us for our mail and news?
Sure.
Of course.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And, are you allowed to comment?
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. Most definitely. Okay. If you stay, you have to put in your commentary at some point. Otherwise, we're going to kick you out.
This is where the cursing starts,
that's right? That's right. Yeah, of course. Damn straight.
Damn it.
There's still some beer left in that growler, so thanks, beer mongers, and let's have some of that. Oh, yeah. This is what everybody waits for. Yeah,
it is. So we got a couple new donors.
We do.
This first donor actually requested not to be named, but I will name the amount.
The amount.
This donor is now supporting us at $6.66 a month.
Yes. Whoever this person is really loves the devil.
Thank you, the devil.
Or really doesn't believe in the devil.
Honestly, if the devil were to sponsor us, I would expect a little bit more.
If you sell your soul and all I got was this lame T-shirt,
all I got was
like
$66.66.
Right. Or a record contract.
And Marco Lowe,
who lives up in Toronto.
Yeah, he wrote into us, yeah?
Yeah. I am entranced by the city of Toronto. I would like to visit it someday.
I'm entranced by all Canadian cities.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, why do you live up where it's so cold?
Or why do you have such a fascinating, awesome culture?
Yeah.
But yes. No, and it's pretty damn cold up there, too.
Yeah, but the culture is shrouded in cold.
Yeah. Well, isn't Toronto is kind of like Canada's Chicago, right?
In a way.
It's like they're Chicago and New York City all rolled into one.
It's their biggest city, isn't it?
Because, yeah, I think Canada has all these different cities that correspond to other cities that exist in the U.S., but every Canadian city is an amalgamation of a couple different city types from the U.S.
Which one is Canada's Detroit?
Canada's Detroit. It's a good question. Winnipeg? Maybe.
Ontario.
Yeah, it could be. Just the whole province.
The whole province of Ontario.
Yeah. Rich Otterstrom, who I have mailed stickers to. Marco, your stickers are coming soon. And Andrew Alderson, who he's the guy that we read mail from last week, who's been listening forever. And I already mailed him his stickers.
Oh.
And Krista's Cougars.
Krista.
Yes, who works for the Beer Mongers.
Yeah, she sort of helped us get hooked up with the sponsorship.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we need to have her in someday.
Also has made a drinking game out of our podcast.
That's right. Boy, I sure enjoy this stuff we got from the Beer Mongers. Ka-ching, take a drink. Next up, Sustainable Joe's documentary is in the works. And that's the guy that we talked to about his ELF tour, electric vehicle that he was piloting from Canada down to Florida. And now there's a documentary, so that's coming up. It's an Indiegogo fundraising campaign, so if you would like to see this hit the screens, you should donate.
Next up, the University of Washington Press published Bike Battles, a book by James Longhurst on the struggle for bicycle access on American roads.
Yeah, this looks like a fascinating book. I got a little promo email from it or about it, and I'm curious to see what they say. So that's coming.
I thought it was going to be about bike jousting.
Yeah, bike battles, PVC and wrestling gloves.
Yeah,
they makeshift lance.
they're rounded at the ends.
Yeah, they are.
Thank God.
Have any of you guys done bike jousting?
I'm scared of bike jousting.
Yeah,
you already have a tall bike.
but I don't have a jousting pole.
Oh, you do have a tall bike, Andy.
I do.
That's right. Last time I talked to you, it still didn't have brakes, right?
Oh, it has brakes now.
It has brakes now.
Yeah, I only crashed once with the no brake version before I wised up and put brakes on it.
You're welcome to borrow my mast as a jousting pole.
There we go.
Yeah. Or you could just put a sail on your tall bike.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds even more scary than jousting.
Have we ever thought about, I've thought about the possibility of, harnessing the wind's power. Because, you know how sometimes you have a tailwind?
On windier days, I often wonder... Because I've got that front rack that sort of juts out from if I could just put a caravel on there.
People have done it before. I've heard stories of people crossing the country by sail bike.
Right.
Always headed west to east. I don't know why that is.
I think that's the prevailing wind, right? I don't know if that's the case or not. Is there a prevailing wind?
That's part of the joke.
Well, the weather goes that way.
You'd have to tack like...
The jet stream does. So you need a really tall mast.
Yeah.
And then and you're set.
Yeah. Hop on that road that goes straight from Northern California over to Pennsylvania.
Right.
That straight road.
I think you'd run into tipping over issues in anything but going more or less straight downwind.
That's true.
I've thought about that quite a bit.
Right, but
I know exactly what you're talking about. And I've thought about that quite a bit. And I think Going across the wind, it just seems problematic in a lot of ways.
You can't tack.
If you're gonna have, well, no, it's not the tacking. It's a, if you're going to have enough sail area. Like, think about, you know, when you see those little tiny, like, dinghy races where the guys are hanging on the trapeze off the side where they hang on the upwind side to counterbalance the force of the wind.
Oh, sure.
How do you get that on a bike? You would have to, you know, like hang off the side of your top tube or something, and then and then you're just not on the bike anymore.
I mean, I like this
idea. You're not using your pedals, though.
So no, no, see, but it's not that. I think it has to do more with steering. And then what do you do if the you know, say you're in a good stiff breeze, and then you enter a wind shadow briefly, go behind a tree or a building.
All right.
And all of a sudden you're hanging off the side of your bike, and the wind goes from,
like, boom,
you know, whatever to half of whatever.
So you need, like, a bulletproof vest.
What?
A bulletproof vest, so
full
when you slide.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how it works. But I think in the downwind, like the more or less straight downwind scenario, it could play out.
Yeah.
I've seen John go up the Rowena Loops while holding a kite.
Wait, the Rowena Loops?
Oh, yeah.
Where's this?
What the?
The Rowena Loops? They're out towards the Dalles.
Okay, so like east of Portland up the river.
Mm-hmm, just the side of the Dalles.
There's a lot of wind up there.
Yeah. Yeah, we were biking back, I think it was from the Dalles Mountain 60, and our friend Maria had a kite.
Nice.
We thought it'd be fun to fly the kite.
Is that Maria?
But you're talking about like a kite, right. Like a recreational kind of.
It was huge.
Are you talking about like a kite surfing kind of kite, or just a like it's got bunnies on it?
Well, yes, it was a bunny kite. Yes.
Really?
Okay. That's right.
That was just a guess.
Well, every kite that's not a windsurfing kite, I believe, is a bunny kite.
It's okay. Required to have bunnies on it somewhere.
They're the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's our family kite. It has bunnies on it.
That's Phil B. in Alaska.
Yeah, did you notice, like, the last 10 minutes we have not said anything about any mail?
Phil B. in Alaska writes an editorial on Access and Anchorage, and it's a fantastic letter. It's very well written. If you've read Phil's blog before, you know he's a great writer. And if you listen to him when he Skyped into us from his mysterious location, his bunker up in Alaska, he doesn't live in a bunker, but cool guy, super well spoken.
He lives in a bear cave.
He does
amongst a herd. No,
yes.
No, a troop.
A herd of bears.
Of bears.
Well, he rides his Pugsley with a bear riding on his back.
That's right.
Yeah. That guy is awesome, and he just wrote a great insightful letter to a prominent politician in Anchorage, because apparently shit's getting real up there.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was bad down here.
Yeah. Oh, dude, this one, I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, next up, Johnny K. explains his first, or his last mail to us.
Right, which was Use the Fence Pedal One.
Not the, what was it?
Use the Fence Pedal One.
Okay. Anyway, Johnny K. writes, hey guys, go back and look at the picture. And this was in reference to a picture previously posted.
Yes.
Of a bike rack.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bike rack that would taco your wheel. Well, since there is very little space between the bars of the bike rack, if you lock your wheel in between the vertical bars and someone comes along and pushes your bike over, that type of bike rack has been known to bend your wheel into the shape of a taco.
So don't use the taco maker.
Don't. Yes.
I tend to agree. Unless you got super robust spokes, and those are expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
just don't use it that way.
Right.
The
true.
Home Depot out on 82nd has one of those wheel bender bike racks.
Okay.
But fortunately, they were optimistic when they put it in, and it's for like 12 bikes.
Oh, gotcha.
And so
you just lay your bike against it.
You know, I can even put my tandem up against it, and I only take up like 3/4 of the rack. There's like, still room for one more bike.
Just bolt it on.
Yeah, well, then I can lock the frame.
Right.
And it's I don't have to put my wheel in the little guillotine.
It's like the equivalent of if you go into the restaurant and ask for like the bathroom key, and they give you like a spatula that's connected to the key, and then you're walking through the restaurant, everybody sees like, oh, there's a guy with a spatula.
Right.
He's about to go into the bathroom. It's kind of like that. It's just basically you want something that is so obnoxious that you would not want to try and take it along with the thing that you actually want.
Right.
Yeah.
Like some gas stations used to like hook the bathroom key up to like, you know, rim.
A cinder block.
Or
exactly.
A trash can lid.
You got to be able to carry this if you want to go to the bathroom. So are you ready to do some Sprocket Podcast theater?
Yeah, let's do some theater.
Okay.
So this is written by Johnny K.
It is. Famous quote from Bicycle Wars, trademark, copyright, registered trademark. Apparently Brock says, Your sad devotion to that ancient religion has not given you the ability to conjure up your stolen bicycle, has it, Lord Aaron?
I find your lack of faith in the power of the fence disturbing.
As he holds off his adversary, off of his feet by his neck with an extended U-lock while standing on his surly Pugsley. Who says bicycles don't belong in space? Mr. Lucas has nothing on me. The names in this quarter, not the originals, all have been changed to protect the not-so-innocent Johnny K. Trademark, copyright, registered trademark, dollar signs.
Yeah, I loved all the copyright trademark symbols.
Is that your first fan fiction? That's kind of like
I guess so.
Alternative history
right.
fan.
Well, I guess we wouldn't technically call the writing contest fan fiction.
True.
Because it didn't include us as
right.
characters.
But hey, if somebody else wants to send us a nice little 1 minute like scenario like that, we'll totally do some more Sprocket Theater.
I'm afraid of like throwing that offer out there.
Seriously, we'll say anything you want us to. We won't.
It'll be a contest to see like what I won't say.
Right? Who can write the most offensive thing? It'd be time to tug the collar a little bit.
Yeah, let's bring it in. Hey, John from Goldendale, you guys often extol the virtues of bikes as transportation equipment.
That's right.
As in not just for recreation. And you often talk about folding bikes, mm-hmm. usually in the context of commute or travel. Well, Team Rubicon, a veteran staff disaster relief organization, is combining both worlds. On their How You Can Help Us wish list, they show a bike kit that a donor can fund. The kit costs $1,000 and consists of a Montague paratrooper folding bike, a Burley Travoy bike trailer, a helmet, which looks like a climber's helmet rather than a cyclist's helmet, iPro safety glasses, and gloves. Montague's website has photos of people actually parachuting while carrying the paratrooper folding bike.
Which is pretty cool. And my old housemate, Jeremy, actually used to work with Team Rubicon. So he's got some experience with them. Yeah. But he was saying that, I think he may have actually introduced the idea of like, you know, we got the disaster relief trials in Portland. Why couldn't we use bicycles as like, you know, a quick, it's quite literally a velocipede. It helps you get faster by foot from one place to another.
Yeah.
And especially in a disaster relief context, like, you know, say all the bridges fall down or something else. Like it shit's really fucked up. And you have this paratrooper bike, like you could possibly parachute in with a bike and do what needs to be done. So
I mean, even if you don't need to necessarily parachute in, a folding bike is a really good solution for places that, you know, the infrastructure is fucked up.
Right.
And, you know, you might have to portage your bike from one place to another.
Totally. And that Burley Travoy is actually pretty useful, like also kind of as a hand truck or something. Not like a heavy duty hand truck, but like, you know, you can use that to move things around, whether it's attached to your bike or not. So, and like sometimes maybe you just want to parachute somewhere, even if you don't need a parachute there.
I never want to parachute anywhere.
I kind of do.
Really?
Yeah.
This is not a desire I've ever had.
I'm going to have parachute month next month.
We push Aaron out of a plane.
That's it.
Next up, Kathy enjoyed last week's show. Always enjoy the podcast, but in this one, everyone was so upbeat and laid back, I just had to say something. Especially fun to share one of Aaron's life moments.
I'm assuming that's in last episode when you revealed the Pugsley.
The Pugsley, the shared Pugsley, I should say. This is not my bike.
This is our bike. And not you and me, but you and somebody else.
Myself and Anna.
Yeah.
I will name names.
Congratulations to you two. That's great.
Yeah.
I like that everyone is upbeat and laid back.
We have.
That seems like tricky.
I'll comment on that. My wife and I are about a foot apart.
At all times?
In height. No, I mean in height. Like, I'm about a foot
children?
Taller than she is.
I don't see her here.
Science!
and so we have this dilemma where, you know, if I get a cargo bike, like, she can't ride it, and her bikes are all too small for me. And so we have a lot of duplicates. Where we have basically the same bike, but one in her size and one in my size.
Okay.
Whereas we have some friends who the husband and wife are, like, can ride the same bike.
Because they're the same size?
Because they're the same size.
Okay.
And they can avoid a lot of redundancy.
Ah.
And it certainly has value.
Right.
You know, knowing what I know now, looking back on my life, you know, I may have made a few two different decisions.
You would have, like, given your wife human growth hormone or something like
maybe.
That.
Maybe.
There are some shoes that can help her fit onto your bike.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know which way it would have gone, but, you know, making her taller, me shorter. You
could always, like, remove a few.
Yeah,
you could always, like, remove a few inches from your shins or something.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it's...
Or those fashionable platform shoes. Is that what you're talking about?
I was just thinking, you know, maybe screw some 2x4s in between the SPD clip.
No, oh, that's a good
yeah.
idea.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, we try to do that, adding chunks of 2x4 to some pedals so that when my kids could ride a bike, and it didn't work too well.
Not so great?
No. The pedals wanted to sit sideways so that the enhanced dimension was actually laying this, you know, parallel to the ground.
Oh, okay.
So the pedals were never actually any closer, except for that when you actually manually rotated the pedal. So
okay.
It was a bad idea.
So you need clips for your children's feet, like, or pedal cages or such?
No, I think we just need to work on screwing the 2x4s to their shoes rather than
the there we go. So platform shoes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect.
Know, yeah.
Yeah.
Take the shoes off before you screw it.
Right. But no, so having, you know, somebody that's, I tip my hat to you. Good, you know, that's a good life choice there.
Yes. Find someone similar size.
Yeah.
I failed.
I don't know what to say.
No, just take the compliment and, you know, carry on.
Gabriel wants us to talk about Friends of Trees. He says
this is the most important thing. Gabriel is part of Friends of Trees, or at least has been on Friends of Trees. Right?
He's a big volunteer with them. Yeah, yeah, he says this is the most Portland thing I have ever done. I am towing two trees, Japanese snowbell and a tulip tree, on my bicycle. I have found my true home in Portland. Stoked. So yeah,
thank you, Gabriel.
That's awesome. Yeah. And at some point we should talk to them next time they do a thing. He said the season is over this year, but there's another tree planting season coming up.
When is Arbor Day?
It's like in the spring, right?
Yeah.
Is it in April?
I don't know.
I'm a terrible person.
That should be tree month.
Yes, I think this is tree month. I could be wrong. Are you looking it up now?
No.
Oh, okay. And then I'll comment on this one.
I almost did, and then I thought better of it.
Why, as Mark Maron says, why Google when you can speculate?
There you go.
Yeah. I will talk about this one because Robert shared a link. A school bus bike incident in the other Portland. He says apparently that in the other Portland, school bus drivers are not as nice as I am.
Oh.
But apparently, yeah, some guy was caught on film kind of being an asshole to a bicyclist, and there it is.
To a cyclist?
To a cyclist, thank you. To an actual bicycle.
To a bicycle. No, you said bicyclist, I think.
Okay, to a person riding a bicycle, yeah. Anyways, yeah. And then we also asked for, like, hey, how do you find out what the most the best transit city is? And Sir Bikes a Lot sent in his response to that. And it's not how to find. He just says San Antonio is the best transit city. But he's got a whole blog post about it, like about kind of like why it's so great.
Why San Antonio is so great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a surprise.
I think they've got,
of
like,
any of the Texas city, I would expect Austin.
You would think so.
Does he travel much?
I don't know.
That's,
we,
I think,
ask
the
him.
Thing is, like, you need a, like, what's that based on?
Right. Yeah, it's a worst. Or it's worth checking out.
I hear San Antonio's nice. I think I'll second that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not. Wait. I always think of Corpus Christi. Corpus Christi is the one that has, like, reefs and stuff, right? But San Antonio has a nice little river that flows through the downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the transit system is great because all the lines are basically straight, and you can do that, I think, in Texas because that part of Texas is flat.
It's flat. Yeah.
But it's like it's very logical. The numbers are numbered in such a way that you can tell. I think eastbound and westbound routes have different numbers, so you can tell just by looking at it which one is which. So it sounds very logical, very well laid out. But anyways, if you want to check that out, bikesanantonio.blogspot.com. We got a link to that up there. And last piece.
Last piece is Tim Mooney is riding Amtrak.
Yeah, he said, just to make us jealous, he's getting on an Amtrak with his lady friend, and they're making a trip out to Portland, Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
And they're coming by Amtrak, and they're coming by sleeper car. And he was saying that he's got, like, hella Amtrak points all saved up. And apparently he was expecting that if you book a sleeper car on Amtrak, that you would have to pay, like, this super expanded rate for every person that rides.
Right.
But you can get onto the Amtrak and book this sleeper car. And then, like, however many people that room is designed to hold, your fare covers those people.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. So
it's,
if,
like,
we got
per room.
For rail,
to,
sir.
Like,
for rail.
Person.
That was that dumb? That was dumb.
Oh.
Your eyes got real big. Like I'd said something offensive. Maybe I have.
No. It just took me a while to get it.
No, but so like if we got one of those like four person what have you or whatever, like you could just book that and then like stuff however many people that you know that it accommodates into that room. So yeah.
Is there a weight limit on the train? I mean,
that's a good question. It's like a clown car. But it comes with
imagine like people would get wise to it though.
Right, right. At some point the conductor's gonna be like, so like half of you have to get off the train now. Right. We're not bringing coffee and orange juice for everyone. But yeah, I mean, again, if you book the room for two, that fare covers room for two and all the meals and everything. So I want to sometime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, then. It's time for us to close out this show.
I suppose we have reached the end of all.
And I'm going to wander over here to this side of the
room. Oh, you're not going to read it from your machine there?
I can't and play the sound at the same time.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But I split it into two because we got so many awesome, generous donors that we're gonna half this.
Okay.
And we're going to have like an A week and a B week. So this is the A week for the first set of donors.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
I wondered how that was going to work out. Okay. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text 250-384-7974.
Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurtbird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot,
Katrina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lee and Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Wise, Doug Cohen-Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez, and thanks, of course, to the Beermongers, who we love very much. And thanks to all you guys. Happy Boat Month.
Yeah.
Boat Month. Too.
Go brush your teeth.
Go to bed.
So, were we going to do news?
We are. Any other arcane cultural knowledge we should throw in here?
Can we make, like, some Fraser jokes?
If you want to.
Fraser? Like, like the Fraser like, River like or the show?
Joe Fraser?
Oh. Like the Cheers spinoff?
Yeah, I suppose it was, yeah.
Like the one where Kelsey Grammer's a psychiatrist in Seattle?
Yep, that exact show.
Okay. That's a Cheers spinoff. Well, I watched Cheers.
Yeah.
How could a spinoff be any better than Cheers, though?
There we go. And I've got my bike gloves on to minimize the sound of the microphone in my hand.
Nice.
But I'm having a rap session with the kids. I'm just hanging out, telling it like it is. You don't do drugs.
Gonna,
you stay in school.
You're going to get out your acoustic guitar and do
that's
like
right,
a,
yeah.
I don't
safety
know, like
songs.
Pink Floyd covers. Or
exactly.
And you're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting. Did I get the name right?